Hi there. Welcome back to the I Am podcast. Thanks so much for joining us for this guest episode. One I think is going to hopefully be a really interesting one for you. Certainly a powerful one like it was for us and leave you with a sense of possibility in your life. I really do hope. Dr. Julie Safria, she is a child and adult psychiatrist. She's a psychoanalyst. She's trained very much so in those traditional medical psychiatric type of ways of helping people. She's also well informed in terms of functional medicine, trained there too, which can identify the and treat root causes of illnesses. But over and above that, she's got some real wisdom when it comes to the energetic and spiritual methodologies. Some really, really interesting things there, whether it be around the Reiki and acupuncture, those areas, but also things like astrology too. So that stuff for me really blew my mind. What about you, Sparks?
Yeah, the conversation definitely went all sorts of places. It was a real broad spectrum of knowledge that Julie's got, and listening to her talk passionately, and also how she spoke about meshing, as you said, these more kind of accepted mainstream ways of treatment with these other sort of traditional ways and spiritual ways, and how she finds the right way to help her patients was really interesting.
Yeah, and I think the big takeaway for me, if you like, and the big theme is around this missing piece of a spiritual practice in our lives, which seems like a challenge when you hear that phrase, can maybe even a bit of a turnoff, but it's fascinating how she pieces it together in this episode and what an available opportunity that is for all of us in every moment of our lives. I think that for me is the real, real opportunity. It's just, yeah. That's it for me. So I hope you can take away that she makes it simple. She makes it really, really inviting, and also puts it well within reach too. So please do let us know what you feel about that when you listen to this. Just a great episode. But before we let you get on with it, I want to just let you know about a book she's got, Sacred Psychiatry, which you can get just about from anywhere online. And if you do get it and you can read it and leave a review, maybe on Amazon or something like that, I know she'd be hugely grateful about that. But she's got a website as well, Sparks.
Yep, judysafriamd.com. It's a great database of everything that Judy's up to, but also an incredible resource with her blog, which she updates regularly each week. Loads of topics in there covering absolutely everything that she speaks about in the conversation we have with her. So yeah, if you want to take a deeper dive, that's definitely the place to go.
Yeah, lots of resources for learning. And in the actual interview too, she gives some interesting online courses and almost programs that you can easily get into, which sound immensely impactful. So something very interesting to me that especially as well. So really hope you enjoy that. And before we let you get into it, a message from the sponsor, Number One Living, is my brand, a fermented drinks company that I've been really, I guess, exploring health and well-being with. You can go on the website, numberoneliving.com, N-O-1, the number one, living.com, and the code IAM20, capital I, capital A, capital M, the number 20. That'll get you 20% off everything, and we're talking everything. We've got shots on there, living fermented shots that are designed for brain health, immune health with the gut brain axis, but also adaptogenic drinks in there for super health benefits, and lots of kombuchas and kefir, water kefirs as well, to, I guess, that it can help you make healthier choices in your life if that's something you really fancy getting into. So fill your boots with that one, and hopefully fill your boots with what's to come in the next hour as Dr. Judy Safria takes us on a bit of a journey. Hope you like it. Dr. Judy Suzanne Rice Safria, thank you very much for joining us on the I Am podcast for what I think will be an incredibly exciting conversation. How are you today?
Very well, and I'm excited to be here with you both.
Brilliant. Well, thanks for joining us. I'm very, very interested, curious, and intrigued by your journey. You have a Western psychiatry background, it sounds like, in some way, adult, child as well. But you also have a lot of other sort of, I don't know, more esoteric, maybe slightly more energy-based spiritual development
areas as well. And that fascinates me. You have a book out, Sacred Psychiatry, which I think, yeah, sounds for me just right up my street. And I'd love to start there if I can, just by asking you, how come you have both these almost explorations going on? And what have you kind of learned from both of them? What have been the different kind of revelations from those experiences and those adventures?
Well, I started out as a fairly conventional psychoanalyst, psychiatrist, which is not a very conventional thing to be to begin with, because most psychiatrists are not trained as psychoanalysts. They are, at least particularly these days, very much more biologically based and just prescribe medications. But I had a practice of psychotherapy and psychoanalysis for probably 20 years at least, before a confluence of losses in my life. Both my parents died within 3 months of one another, and my marriage ended, and I had three little children. And it was at the time of an astrological event that's called the Chiron Return, which very often catalyzes in people spiritualizing of their life. And at that time, for the very first time, I consulted a professional astrologer. And astrology was not something that was foreign to me, because my dad was really interested in it. And he was also a psychiatrist and psychoanalyst, but he was in the closet about his interest in astrology. He was a professor of psychiatry, and he just thought that that would have been just, you know, death for his reputation. And so I consulted an astrologer, and I was just blown away by her insight and understanding of me. And I was just intrigued and went back to see her multiple times to look at the birth charts of all of the important people in my life, until I finally resolved that I had to learn this art myself. And so that prompted me to begin a course of study with a famous astrologer named Stephen Forrest, who I studied with for several years, and then studied with another astrologer, Maurice Fernandez. And all of this, it was somehow this study of astrology somehow opened me up, and I started to explore other spiritual paths, such as shamanism. But I also began to incorporate a functional medicine approach into my practice. Like, there was a lot of information that was just beginning to surface about the connection between the gut and the brain. And so I learned about all of that. That was in like 2011. It was way ahead of when it became kind of more mainstream in the media. And I studied with a biochemist who used nutrients to treat psychiatric illnesses. So I just began this wide-ranging exploration, including learning about treating environmental toxicity. So these days in my practice, I combine both my skills as a psychotherapist and psychoanalyst, but with astrology and with functional medicine. And so everything, all of it is true. All of it has a piece of the truth. And in my view, nothing can be left out. I do a lot with nutrition in my practice. People don't seem to realize that what they eat has a powerful impact upon the way that they feel. So a lot of stuff about nutrition and lifestyle. And in fact, if somebody is not really willing to make those changes, I don't want to work with them, because I don't want to start prescribing medications to people. That's not what I'm interested in. And I'll be glad to prescribe if somebody is coming to see me because they want to get off of them and we need to like step down slowly. But I don't want to, it's like somebody's psychiatrist retired and they want now somebody else to prescribe their stimulants. That's not for me.
Wow. That's really interesting. To give a little bit of away, I guess, my journey in Sparks, I don't know how you all describe yours, but has been very much brought up in the logical physical world of all the definitions around the physical, you know, what it, the way you look, the performance in high level sport, health kind of becomes fitness. And the medical side of things, you know, the treatments you get, it's very much, you need to feel it. If you can feel it, it's working. If you go for a treatment of physiotherapy and it hurts, you kind of think we're onto something, you know, it's all that physical level.
3D.
3D, very 3D. And I think what happened was, and I've heard you talk, and I'd love to get into this as well, about archetypes. I certainly sort of found myself growing up just bathed or flooded with fear. For whatever reason, no idea, but I constructed myself against that fear, and mixed with my passion for a ball sport, I became quite effective because I was playing do or die. I couldn't, the idea about losing and perfectionism and all these things kicked in, that I was so intense, and it burnt out. Not in that I wanted to give up, but that I essentially just broke down on all levels, and at some point was forced to turn in and face a lot of this. And as I did, thankfully, that was a bit of an opening for me. But until then, it was a bit of a sort of one pill fix. It was a bit of, you know, I need to feel this. It was all logical, logical, logical. And what I found was, what started to excite me was to connect to the magical. And we call this a little bit in our world now, this survivor to creator shift. You know, the logical is a kind of a survival, the physical survival versus this creating ability, which has an effortlessness to it. It has a kind of an internal kind of limitless to it. And I sort of be really interested to see your take on that, because my healing, if you like, was always, while I was injured and struggling, all I could say was, I've got to get back to where I was. I wanted no collaboration with the universe to, you know, work together to find out who I was meant to be or what was really possible. I just wanted to get back to what my normal was. And I'm really interested about that idea that people are talking about diet in these aspects, these ways. People are talking about all these other things about just getting back to a bit more like when I was younger and when things were better, instead of what it seems to be this huge unexplored dimension of where we've never been, regardless of whether we're getting older or not.
Yeah. Well, I was having all sorts of thoughts while you were talking.
Far away.
So definitely, I mean, when people are living in a state of fear and it's all about survival, then they're very kind of closed off and they're feeling alone and they're struggling and then they're in a fight, and it's not about feeling some kind of sense of oneness or connection with other people or the universe. You know, normal, like get back to normal, like normal is, it's like what is typical and what is average. So like in this culture where I live, it's like normal to drink a lot. You know, it's normal to not spend any time outside in nature. It's normal to be on screens all the time. It's normal to consume, you know, very devastating and alarming news all the time. So normal is not necessarily the same as what is healthful or what is beneficial. Like I have like a spiritual practice that I do regularly. And I also, in my book, I talk a lot about having a spiritual practice, because many people come to see me and they grew up with some kind of conventional religious upbringing, Catholicism or Judaism, and they felt alienated and they didn't really resonate with it. And so they don't have a way that they don't have any model for creating a spiritual life, which does not have to do with having an organized religion necessarily at all. So it's my experience that when you do like a whole variety of spiritual practices, it was just as you say, that somehow things start to flow and you're connected in some kind of way and synchronicities happen and you're guided and you're led, but it's not like something that you can will. You can like create the conditions for it by meditation or by spending time in nature, by deeply listening, by using various tools for divination, and having like a conversation with the divine. And that then opens you up to your life flowing in a way that it often does not when you're just doing it out of like sheer will and effort.
Yeah, I like to think of it as this kind of that survivor state where everything's a problem. And then there's that creator state where anything's possible, except in the survivor state, you really want to talk about that. Whereas in the creator state, you're not even thinking that anything's possible because you're just so engaged in it. There's almost this absence and there's this presence in the two. And I guess is that presumably, I mean, I've spoken with lots of people on the professional side in terms of trying to find my way at the time back to me. And I guess that was the idea, was to, you know, to get to bring back some of that magic that I felt when I was free, but I had it down as just, you know, get back to that place. But that presumably is the goal with all these types of healings. I found it incredible, by the way, when the person that I was speaking to had been through something themselves or was going through something themselves. I found that such a game changer, rather than sort of someone that seemed to be sort of with a textbook talking to me, but to be able to exchange on that level. And I think part of that exchange really in itself was the therapy, not rather than what was being said. It was just the connection. But then you have these energy healings, these more esoteric types of things, but presumably that healing, it has no bounds really in terms of where it can go. It's a limitless exploration. And is that the point of the healing, to get us from that survivor state into this creator state? Is that what you see it as?
Well, certainly the survivor state is like a state of enormous stress, right? And that has just a lot of negative consequences for the physical organism. And certainly when a person is feeling like very fearful and stressed out, they don't have any capacity to connect to something larger than themselves. I am very interested in inviting in the assistance of guides and of helpers. And it's not like I hear like a guide talking to me, but I say, please help me, please guide me, please show me the way. Marianne Williamson has this sentence that she says, where would you have me go? What would you have me say, and to whom? So you just kind of put it out there and then I feel guided. But it's not like I'm hearing now Judy say this, you know, but I've like started offering ketamine assisted psychotherapy in my practice. And that's where I bring in the most kind of I really do shamanic practice with my patients before we begin the journey. Like we do it in a ceremonial and sacred way, like calling in the ancestors and the guides and the four directions. And there's just this feeling that if you set sacred space and you invite in divine assistance, that then you're going to have an experience that's very different than if you don't set that intention and pay attention to what happens in that framework.
Yeah, that rings true for me, even on such a basic level as to ask the question and then not try and answer it, just to ask the question and then let it unfold. But it's quite funny when you find yourself looking for someone's name and you can't get it. And it's only when you move on that it comes to you. You've asked for it. You almost like you say to yourself, I want this name, please. Now I'll get on with my business. I'll get out of your way. You find it, pass it on to me, and you'll. But there's also, I think, when you mentioned that ceremonial side, there's so much there for me, just in terms of my life now, looking at the way, yeah, and Sparks, you can attest to this, I guess, in a second, that the sport that we're in, your body is just becomes a machine. Or it can be looked at that. It becomes just something that you order about. It becomes just a vehicle just to get from A to B and do things. I mean, you can get quite frustrated with it. You judge it. You don't like the way it looks. You want it to look like that. It's a comparison. It's competition. And it's abusive in a way. But this the gratitude, the reverence, the curiosity, it's kind of so mind-opening. And for me, that sort of almost equates to that ceremonial side. With regard to even just when you go to drink a glass of water, you can understand that, you know, back in the day, that a glass, just being able to drink water would be an absolute blessing. To find it, where does it come from? What is it? It's life source. But now it's almost like we know what it is, according to us. So, you know, what's the big deal? It's just a clear liquid.
Right. Well, nothing is considered sacred. You know, like, I think it's such a mistake to eat your food without, like, stopping and pausing and blessing your food and giving gratitude. I mean, we all eat multiple times a day, and every time it's an opportunity to stop, to pause, to drop in, to connect. And I just recommend that to everybody, to make, I mean, all of your life can be made into something sacred. Like, there's like, I'm always creating these different practices for myself, and they expand, and I add one thing after another. And I don't know, in the last month, one of the things that I've been saying, and I can't even remember where I read it, but I've been saying, seeing the divine in everything, I experience all of life as a gift and a blessing. So, you know, like, just everything.
Yeah. Yeah. That's mad. That really, really rings a lot of bells. I think
sets you in a great position to be able to really appreciate everything that you've got going on. I think if you can look at it in that way and lose kind of that almost human complacency that we've almost developed in those of us that live in the sort of the more fortunate countries, that everything is there on demand, it's wherever you want it, we don't really have those struggles. But to kind of understand that, what a actual amazing opportunity that is something that I think definitely is hugely overlooked.
Right. And even like, not even like just good stuff, like when bad stuff happens,
yeah,
you know, stuff exactly. That you don't like, that makes you suffer or unhappy. You know, if you can just like try and see like, what's the gift in it? What's the lesson? I mean, you may not be ready to do that when something just horrible happens, like immediately, but eventually, like, that's the place to get to.
Yeah. What? Go on, Sparks.
Sorry. No, after you, mate.
No, I was just going to say that the gratitude thing, I remember when I was playing, I was someone that took kicks. I put the ball on a tee and took a kick at goal. And when you're setting that ball up, you are so precious with the ball, the way you lean it, where it sits. And you know that it is a ceremonial thing, that when you place and you go through your routine, and it has a certain ceremony about it because it's so important to you. But it's only so important because I think, you know, in some ways there's some kind of gift expression there, but there's also this idea that I'm just desperate to get it right, so I really want to treat it well. But on that deeper level, you're becoming one with it. There's a communication going on. You have a desire, and your desire is being communicated through that as an exchange, as a collaboration. And it's respectful both ways. That really interesting. And what you said about just there with regard to blessing the difficult things, I guess two things that really spring up for us in this is, one of them is relationship with challenge, and the other one is relationship with the unknown. And I think the unknown, we're talking about that kind of space for something higher than yourself and everything. But the relationship with challenge, yes, Sparks, I don't know if I was cutting in on you, but just such a big one. All I wanted to do was conquer that. It was my way or the highway. And if something turned up, it was, I'll suffer it, but I'm going to get you back. And I think there's a certain degree of persistence that can get you so far, but it's going to end in breakdown. You're taking on a very, very sort of, you know, a very strong higher force that has a message to deliver. And I don't think it's going to give up till it gets its message across.
Yeah, when you were talking about uncertainty, I mean, we're living in such uncertain times. I mean, it's so easy to go into a fear state about what's going on politically, what's going on environmentally. And yet, what's going on with technology? And yet there's also this simultaneously for me, this kind of wonder and oh my God, what a wild time to be alive. It's so what is going to happen? What is coming next? And there's something that is, both anxiety provoking and also tremendously exciting about this time, as much as it's terrifying.
I think, I would. That's one of those things that I imagine if we were to have a time machine at our beck and call, we would probably find that most people were feeling that at most points of time, because obviously it's relevant to what you've got going on at that moment. But no, I think definitely there's always that opportunity to view things in either way. And I think we all swing across that continuum through every 24 hours that we're given. We can find ourselves staring at something, looking at that's fantastic, or oh my word, that's terrifying. Judy, one of the things that I found really interesting is the way you talk about not just solely focusing on one part of treatment. And I think, if you don't mind, just to kind of dig a little bit deeper into, let's say as an example, someone comes to see you, and in that initial assessment or meeting with someone, whatever you see or pick up, is there a kind of hierarchy through which you treat things, or is there a way in which you will look at which thing you will probably look at addressing first? Because I've always kind of felt a little bit that if you can get the physical to a relatively stable, at least, condition, then being able to attack the psychological and the spiritual becomes a little bit easier. But when you don't have that foundation of health underneath it, those seem to be almost unconquerable kind of adventures to go on.
Right. Well, I mean, in some ways I agree with you, but in other ways I think you're dividing things up in a way that they really can't be divided. Like it's all intertwined.
Okay.
So there's rarely a patient that I see that I don't recommend these days something called limbic system retraining. And the limbic system is a deep structure in the brain that's is involved with our fight and flight response. And it's connected with our autonomic nervous system. And because of just what we're talking about, all of the fear and the collective and the news cycle and the toxins in the environment and the pandemic and the environment, just people are in a chronic state of stress. And you cannot heal when you're in a chronically stressed out state. So there are a couple of different programs that can be downloaded from the internet that I routinely recommend to my patients. One of them is called the Gupta program, Gupta. Another one that is a new one that patients are loving is called Primal Trust. And it's just like these brain retraining exercises and guided meditations that very systematically and in a very structured, highly effective way teach people how to calm down. So you just need to calm down. That is just very fundamentally basic for any kind of healing. And then, I don't see how anybody can be eating like a bad diet, an inflammatory diet, and heal. That's also just basic, that a person needs to have a healthful diet. So those two things are kind of like givens. And then many patients, they have a condition that's called mast cell activation, which is not typically recognized by physicians and not by psychiatrists, but it really often presents with anxiety and depression. And there are some very effective treatments to stabilize the mast cells, which are these white cells in the body that contain different bioactive substances. One of the most important ones is histamine. And so, like, if a person is suffering from mast cell activation, they often have like a lot of different kinds of physical symptoms, but they also have psychiatric symptoms. So I'll treat mast cell activation. And then, you know, like if a person doesn't have any spiritual practice and they don't have any community and they just feel alone and desperate, you know, like they're not going to be able to heal, you know? So like you need to try to help them think about like how they might develop that for themselves, or talk about different things that they could do in their life to help feel like a sense of connection and oneness and peace and trust. So it's all intertwined. Like, I don't feel like you can like start with the physical and then go somewhere else. It's all mixed up together. And, you know, I started out as a psychoanalyst and psychotherapist, and that is also enormously important when there's childhood trauma, different kinds of attachment problems, and experiences that a person had growing up in their family that has led them to continue to expect that the same thing is going to happen again and again, and they just behave in ways that cause themselves suffering, or they are drawn repeatedly to people who are disappointing or abusive. Like, you need to address all of that.
It seems really interesting to me that when I was in the, and I kept meeting crisis moments throughout my life because of this strong kind of almost anti-life movement, this strong resistance in me to allow and accept, you know, because of this fear, I guess. And so I met lots of crisis moments and saw, you know, lots of people, but in the younger days, a lot of it was around the CBT kind of positive reframing and everything, which was kind of fine. And I feel like on the surface, it got me back going again. But I just felt like underneath, it didn't get to what was there. And what happened subsequently was I just came back. And it was bizarre. And this is what kind of started to open up my mind to certain things, was that when these crisis moments came, sometimes they wouldn't come because of a situation. They would just pour out of me. And I could feel them build and come from, you know, wherever. And I sort of feel, for me, that was a really big space. But one of the most powerful things I think you sort of said there was that where we look at, okay, this is, I'm sort of struggling, I'm stressing, I'm fearful, I really want to have that amazing positive life, but there's no way, for me anyway, that I find of going from one to the other straight away. And even the suggestion that you can be quite offensive, you know, where someone says, oh, get your chin up, you know, come on, there's
right.
people,
pull
people
yourself over, up by your bootstraps.
Yeah, people over there are struggling, you know, that's real struggles. Yeah, get yourself together. But what the inevitable beginning is like the calming down, the relaxation, the coming to some sort of ease and just.
I love that word.
And that for me, that I find there's so much power in that patience and that ability to move slowly and to almost challenge the, is this true? You know, to move in a way that can almost challenge, is it true that this, and not to actually be in a hurry to get there. And I certainly, that was a big struggle for me, but I wonder with some of the things you're talking about now, is this the deeper exploration? Because there's sort of a lot of the energy, things you mentioned about and even the astrology, the shamanic stuff, and even looking at things like Reiki and these other ideas, which sparks, you know, were you pretty closed off to these when you were young? I know if we were young playing rugby, if someone came in and said, here, let's do some essential oils and let's do some Reiki, we'd have been out of there in a shot. We'd have just been like, no chance. But now
I was always drawn to stuff like this. Always. Like when I was a little girl, I read every single book I could find in the library about witches and magic.
Wow.
Like, I this has been a longstanding preoccupation. And you can see the acorn in the oak, you know, yeah. Like.
But I completely agree, is almost now it's these things which feel for me that I'm drawn to, the more subtle nuanced stuff, the inner exploratory side. But do you feel that people are coming, is there a shift towards that now? People are still.
There's way greater openness than there ever was. I mean, there's an enormous burgeoning interest in astrology. I mean, there I mean, that is so different than it was just even like 10 years ago. You know, people are, and in the Tarot, people are very interested in different kinds of spiritual practice. I mean, you know, mindfulness meditation has become just like, you know, brushing your teeth. It's like good mental hygiene kind of. And then I think something gets lost in that as well. You know, like what I think needs to be more emphasized is what we were talking about earlier, is appreciating that it's all sacred. Yeah. And it's all divine, and that we need to treat each other and the natural world with love and respect, you know, like, but it's pretty simple.
That's the biggest thing that's coming through me right now in this period of my life, for some reason, is exactly that. The difference between logical and magical is, I think, is that the acceptance of the divine, because to look at mindfulness through a logical lens is, I'm going to do my 10 minutes, right, mm-hmm. done, tick off the list, that's my 10 right. done, going to eat right. that, ate it. But without that gratitude, without that engagement, without that curiosity and the intrigue and the openness and the deep connection, or at least allowing for that,
right,
it feels like it isn't actually the thing until the recognition of the divine comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if that makes sense, but yes. Yeah, so could you please go on, take care of.
No, it's you know, like, there's an astrologer who I like a lot named Emily Trinkus, and she said that astrology is an apprenticeship to the mystery, you know, because, like, if you witness how real it is and how it works and how there's just this astonishing correlation between what is going on in the heavens and in the everyday world, in the person's character and personality and life purpose, it's just like, how can this possibly be? And yet you see repeatedly that it's so. So there's just like these things that are so evident and yet we don't understand. And it's so narrow to restrict what you say is real to what you can like measure and repeat. Like, it's a huge mistake.
How did you, mind if you don't mind me asking, how did you find the whole experience of learning the Tarot and the astrology, and sort of in comparison to what I would imagine was quite a different process of when you were going through the qualifications in order for the psychoanalyst and psychotherapist?
Well, you know, there's some things that are different and some things that are the same. I mean, there's an awful lot of information to learn. Like, astrology is a language. Like, there are signs and there are houses and there are planets and they each have archetypal symbolism. So if you're going to speak astrology, you have to learn what each of those things are. So just in the same way as, you know, you need to learn about the different kinds of blood cells, you know, like, there's information that you need to yeah. learn. There's a lot. And Tarot too. I mean, there's a lot of symbolism. There's like traditional meanings of the cards that, you know, takes effort and memorization and practice to wrap your mind around. And I mean, psychoanalysis, I mean, that's really pulls on something very intuitive, in the same kind of way that when you look at like an astrological chart, you can't just, when you look at it, I mean, you need to, in order to like speak the language, you have to know the meanings of the symbols, but then you do something with all of that that is intuitive. And the same thing with the Tarot reading, like, you just can't know what the individual cards mean. You have to get like the message. And when you listen to a patient who's talking to you and you understand what they're saying with the words and what you believe is what is driving it unconsciously, you know, so there is that same kind of intuition. I mean, I don't really like all the functional medicine stuff that much. I'm not somebody who loves ordering tons of lab work and, you know, tweaking people's labs. And I mean, there's certain things that are useful, but I never was like a really like a drawn to like being like a scientist.
Yeah, the astrology and so much of, yeah, the shamanic, everything, essential oils, the herbal side of it, even the, so much of it comes from just presumably thousands of years ago, inner exploration, people sitting, because there are no, I mean, unless, you know, someone can prove me wrong with ancient civilizations that they had technology beyond ours or whatever this, but presumably there is the ability, all this information is at hand.
Right, and that in indigenous cultures, the plants were speaking to them and telling them.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, like, I don't have that capacity myself, you know, like.
Shame. Yeah, but there is that subtle intuitive side you mentioned, because yeah, we played the game and anyone can learn the game. But it's when you've learnt it, what you bring to it.
Right, and the art.
The art. And it's interesting that I find it quite, there's certain things that I'm not drawn towards. And I wonder if that's because I don't have much of an art to bring to it. Whereas I know my passion will take me to something where I feel at the right time in my life, I follow my passions and excitements. They lead me to something where I might have a gift to open that up. I'd be interested just with everything that you've experienced at so many different disciplines or areas of healing. Has something changed in you? Because I was really interested in your journey. You mentioned about what you've been through personally, what you struggle with and what you're working on. It's really interesting to hear someone that has so much study and experience and research and insight. And yet you two are on your own personal journey. You're not sort of sat there above everyone saying, right, listen, everyone, here's how you do it. You're in the middle of it. I find it deeply endearing and reassuring. But it'd be interesting to hear what that looks like for you, if you're happy to share.
Yeah, like, well, I mean, I think I've mentioned it already, like what's becoming increasingly important, like just increasingly is my spiritual practice. And, you know, using my drum and tuning in and asking for guidance, using my oracle cards and my tarot cards. And there's something, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Akashic Record.
Yep.
It's like this idea of a library of information that just contains everything that ever was and ever will be. And like, I like to sit and like tune into the Akashic Record and do like automatic writing and like all of those kinds of things where I'm developing that side of myself is what is most interesting to me.
You mentioned about the drum.
Mm-hmm.
And the vibration, the kind of all those kind of areas of tuning into to ourselves on that level. I find it fascinating because that's something that, depending on your mindset, you're going to brush that off very quickly or you're going to look into it. But the interesting thing for me is that it's happening all the time. The type of music we're surrounding ourselves with, the noise we're surrounding ourselves, the type of energy and the conversations we're surrounding ourselves with. So even when you start to look like that, it's so simple to say that actually, if you spend your day saying these type of things feel good right now, this isn't helping. But one of the biggest challenges for me would be to, in the moments of stress that I have or have had, would be to even to begin to be able to tune into what feels good in that survival state. It's just plow on. Whereas the power now to recognize, as you said, what's helpful, what feels good, what resonates with me is a really interesting part of that. But just things like that 20 years ago would have been so bizarre to me. Mm-hmm. Whereas for some reason now, I can't think of anything more just, I guess, obvious. Mm-hmm. If you know
it's
what I mean.
Wonderful though, isn't it? How you're developing and how you're changing and how you're sensitizing and spiritualizing your being.
It just feels, it feels liberating in the sense that in every situation, there's so much possibility. As you mentioned with challenge, there's so much possibility. And to begin to think that boredom, how could you be bored? Just in any moment, the sheer possibility. You mentioned about the Akashic Records and the whole concept of living in the now and the presence and sort of recognizing that this moment, so everything that is right here now to be tuned into. And yet we do get in that space of being like, oh, it's a long day. Oh my gosh, I've got to go meet this person today. Oh gosh, you know, oh no, not that. And I can't believe I did that yesterday. Oh, I'll never get over that. All these types of spaces where the story, because we seem to be very quick to shut the door and say, right, I know what that is. I know who that person is. I know how these things work. And it's some sort of mini power trip in that, because it's almost like getting one over on the universe. Like, yes, you're so weird and crazy, but at least I know this. But as soon as you tune into that, there's a deeper feeling, which is slightly, it hurts, because the thought of a life lived logically that way for me is not a good one. It doesn't bode well for you physically once you get past sort of 35 probably either. You know, it's largely a downhill trip. But that I find probably the most powerful thing is being introduced to, or at least open to, these kind of possibilities. Doesn't mean that, you know, we spoke about ecstatic dance recently with some people, which is, you know, my wife absolutely loves it. I'm still not there yet. I'm just, have you been yet, Sparks?
I'm not even sure if I dance, let alone ecstatically. Certainly not a word that's been used with my moves. So,
but even so, there's a respect for it. I see it. I get it. I'm just not sure I'm drawn to it. But are you still finding things in your world that you're being drawn to, that intuitive side? How do your revelations come about to you? How do you tap in when you do tap into that? That sort
of. Well, I told you about the automatic writing. And then when I drum, like, things come to me. When I walk in nature, like, I always have to, like, you know, tell myself to leave my headphones at home, because I love listening to podcasts and learning all kinds of new stuff. So leave that at home and just kind of be with myself and to listen. You know, like, one of the things that, and I also, I'm an artist. So, like, things come to me when I'm working on my paintings.
Yeah.
I think one of the most important things is, like, to try to cultivate, like, an elevated vibration. So there's an app on my phone that's called Insight Timer, and they have all kinds of great courses. And I happened to stumble upon one that was about raising your vibration, and it was just like a brief three-part thing. And the man advocated, like, taking a piece of paper and making a, like, horizontal line across it, halfway across it, and underneath write down all the things that lower your vibration, and above it write all the things that elevate your vibration. And it was a very interesting exercise. Like when I hear the news, it lowers my vibration, you know, like it makes me feel denser. And when I don't eat well, you know, it lowers my vibration. When I eat too much, it lowers my vibration, you know, like when I am in my studio, or I have a great conversation with a friend, or I'm playing my drum, it raises my vibration. So just all the things, like, just, I mean, you can, like, brainstorm what lowers it, what raises it, and try to do more of what raises it, and try to, you know, be mindful about not doing the stuff that lowers it.
Yeah. That's very cool. Yeah.
It's amazing. It's amazing when it's put in such easy to understand terms. I know that sounds like I'm sort of joking.
No, not at all.
Mean that is such a great way of explaining it, to just in that way.
So like, if you're having dinner and it's, like, really delicious and you really have had enough to eat, but it's just so yummy, you'd like to have, like, another serving. You're like, oh, do I want to lower my vibration now? You know, like, you can ask yourself.
But that's really interesting. Even coming to things like when you're in some kind of conflict, you're in an argument with someone close to you, you know full well, it never raises your vibration to win that argument or to lose it. Neither,
or to be
them,
unkind to somebody, you know?
But what does is, for me at least, is the shift of being able to go to, as you mentioned before, the deep listening, the understanding, the ceremonial kind of respect of that conflict, to almost kind of say, this is a really powerful moment. I appreciate where you're coming from. And the patience around it, that kind of sends me to a different level.
Yeah.
Yeah. Moments where, you know, you offer that intimacy or that kind of connection with someone when you know there's a block, but you face it, and it feels like, you know, in France, when I was playing rugby in France, they have a thing with handshaking. You have to shake everyone's hand every day. And if you've already shaken a hand, if you go to do it later on, they'll sort of put their hand up and go, no, we've already shaken. You know, it's really interesting. But with that, you obviously look in people's eyes. That doesn't matter what's happened the day before. The next day you turn up, you shake them. But of course you can just, yeah, whatever, let's get it over with. But it's the ceremony of it. There's a real opportunity to look someone in the eyes, recognize they're there, recognize their presence.
So nice.
Beautiful. And it raises vibration.
Right. And same, you know, like you're at the checkout counter and not treating the cashier like a widget, you know, just like, yeah, look at them, you, yeah, know, yeah, say, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. How's your day?
Yeah. But and
you know, exactly, a human, yeah, being.
Yeah. Oh, completely. So I want
constantly. Sorry, I'm constantly scolded by my kids for doing that.
What's that?
stop talking to people. What are you doing? Is that?
Yeah. Yeah. The So I'm interested, just sort of, not to push you too far down this route, but the astrology thing, I find really interesting, because the furthest I've probably gotten with astrology was sort of looking upwards and just kind of, you know, it probably having a little bit of a marvel at how big everything is and, you know, what it all means. But so could you sort of give me a little bit of an insight into, if I came to you and said, right, you know, this is my story, whatever, and where would you start with that?
With astrology?
Yeah.
So astrology is just the most fascinating thing in the world. And so it's both like very impersonal and it's extraordinarily personal. It's like paradoxical in a way to me. So it's impersonal insofar as you did not choose your birth chart. Your birth chart was created at the moment that you were born. It depends upon where you were born and when you were born. And that is a snapshot of the heavens at that moment. And that has just a lot of implications. There's like a sacred blueprint. There's an energetic roadmap for you that is created by that moment of your birth.
So if I was born at the same, obviously many babies born on the same day in the same minutes, does that mean
that it'd have to be in exactly the same place as well?
So would that mean that someone born in the next room to me in that hospital,
they would have the same birth chart. They would have the same birth chart as you.
Okay.
But like, I mean, there are astrologers who do readings for people by just having the data, and they just, maybe they have some kind of intuitive capacities that I don't, but I don't know how one can read a birth chart without having a conversation with the person whose chart it is, because there are symbols in the chart. So let's say the person has the sun in their chart in very close proximity with the planet Neptune. Okay. So I would look at that and I would say, the sun is a symbol often of the father. Neptune is a symbol often of like spirituality and cosmic consciousness, but it's also a symbol of mental illness and of addiction. So like, I wonder, you know, what this person's experience has been, or it could be just like a father who left, who's absent, you know? So, but I would definitely have some kind of question about what is going on with this father, you know, but I would, for myself, would need to have a conversation with the person. And so like when I do a reading, I say to the person, I'm just going to talk for like 10 or 15 minutes and just say the way the chart is speaking to me and what I see. And then I'd like you to give me some feedback. I'd like you to tell me like what is accurate, what doesn't land, you know, and then we go from there. Because even though these two babies were born in adjacent rooms, there's like an archetypal invitation, and each of them is going to manifest it in different ways.
Yeah, interesting. And that's, and when astrology might show what's going on, what does that offer for the experience of opening or healing or what's going to come?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that part of it as well?
Yes. So like, okay, you have your natal chart, what your birth chart, and then the planets continue to move in the heavens and they make relationships with the natal chart. And so for instance, when the planet Pluto is contacting your sun or contacting like a particular angle in your chart, like that is correlated with a particular kind of experience that often can be very challenging. It can be like dragging you down into the depths, into the deep unconscious, and like excavating things that are very, you know, can cause a lot of suffering. And, but there's also like huge potential for transformation with that energy. And that is not going to last forever. Pluto is a very slow moving planet. So a person's Pluto transit might last 4 or 5 years, and they can come to see you and they say, oh my God, you know, like my life is just like falling apart. I don't know what is going on. Things have never been, you know, this chaotic and one thing after another. And I can see that they're in a Pluto transit and that it's probably going to last for another 3 years, but then the energy is going to shift. So I can say that to them. Like, I don't know what's going to happen, but I can say what the astrological weather is likely to be.
Wow. Because there's lots spoken about, and a lot of very intriguing stuff that for me at least, around one, the cyclical nature of everything, that finding that things work in, you know, 12-year groups or 6-year groups.
Absolutely.
And I find that fascinating because, mm-hmm. again, the truth of it is mind-blowing in terms of at least my experience. And then with it also, these kind of moments maybe where there's certain reverence paid to certain times during the year or a certain year when something's happening up in the heavens and it's respected or revered and certain spiritual practices take place during those kind of moments. How do you explain the connectivity between what's up there and what's down here? Is it the interconnected? Yeah.
I can't explain it. I can just observe it, that it's incontrovertible. It's absolutely evident to me that it is connected and that there's, you know, like, I mean, astrologers were all just like looking ahead to 2020 and the lineup of planets that there were in the sky, anticipating what it was going to, that these planets were going to have a certain configuration. They're like, oh my God, like what is going to happen?
There was something strange ahead when they looked.
Oh yes, it was. And I remember like people sort of fear and kind of awe about it, but nobody knew what it would be. And then boom, pandemic, you know, like the whole world stopped, you know, like it was so anticipated. There's an event coming up, on April 20th, that is not of the same magnitude, but it's a big astrological event of the year. It's Uranus and Jupiter coming together. And that could portend like a big, like different way of looking at things, like some kind of breakthrough or some kind of shift, like who knows what, like, oh, well, you know, or are we going to have contact with extraterrestrials, or, you know, like, what is it going to be? We don't know. Like, you can just say that there's something, you know, of magnitude that is likely to take place around that time. Similarly, in, I think it's of April of 2025, Saturn and Neptune are coming together. And that again is like this point that is like some kind of reset, some kind of new beginning, some kind of imagination becoming real, you know, like that, like there's these things that you can anticipate and watch what happens.
Well,
you don't know what, but yeah, you know that there's what the flavor is.
It's
I feel like I might need to go on that limbic training app. I can feel something up on me a bit.
But the it's we need to note those down, by the way. We definitely, you've already got them. But
in the notes.
It's crazy because I guess, you know, like we said, there's two different, well, there's many different ways of looking at anything, but one way is to look at this and be a bit switched off by it because, you know, there's maybe a more other, more appealing ways, if it's a more logical way, more sort of what you're used to, but certainly there's so much room for this. But, you know, when I was at school, I remember being sort of learning a lot about how things were, how they work, with quite a lot of certainty. But there seems that the uncertainty, the relationship with uncertainty is so powerful, and it allows you to look into these things and create a relationship which you just don't need to control. And I think that's such a powerful idea for me, is even when, you know, we've had injuries and you have healing and you want to control the healing. I need to be back by now. And of course, but to set the intention and to do your part and turn up and connect to the possibilities of what it could be, but enjoy the unknown of it. But I remember certainly in any life, for me, especially when you was in those games, that the thought about not getting it your way was just going to be the end. But the open-minded nature of this, I mean, presumably what does, if I can push on this before sort of taking up too much of your time, what's this done for you in terms of one of the most logically difficult aspects, or the most aspect when viewed logically is the most difficult for me, is this idea that you're born and you're physical and then you come to the end. How, with everything you're researching, what's happened to your view of your own life cycle and your own identity?
I definitely don't think that, you know, when I die, that that's the end. I mean, I definitely don't think that. I believe that, you know, like my consciousness existed before I was born and I incarnated in this body, and it'll persist after my body is no longer alive. I mean, I'm not eager to die. I love, you know, I want, like, I'm so excited about the potential that, you know, medical advances will allow us to have a longer lifespan, because there's more stuff I want to learn that would take a long time to learn. And I don't, you know, like, I'm already 67, you know, like, you know, like I need like 30 years to learn some stuff, you know?
Yeah, you need to be telling us what's happening in April 2060. That's what needs to happen. Just what we always like to get in at some point is, following that question, the I Am series is about human potential.
Hmm.
And the more we talk about it, the more it challenges the idea of, yeah, the human, the individual and everything. But what does human potential mean to you when you hear that?
I guess our potential to be as creative as possible and to give our unique gift to the world, we came into this lifetime with, what the Chinese medicine calls like a heavenly mandate, that we, the potential to realize that and to contribute to planetary healing and to uplifting each other and to creating the world that we would like to see and have be possible.
And in terms of, we've discussed a lot of it, but in your words, what is it that's holding us back from that? What would you pinpoint in terms of the, you know, what's getting in the way?
Well, you know, like, I can identify what I see getting in the way. Why it's like this, I really don't know. You know, like, why there's so much fear, why there's so much greed, you know, like, why is it like that? You know, like, what's the idea with all of that? I mean, like, people that are amassing more and more and more wealth and destroying the planet in the process, like, what do they think? Like, that's going to work out well for them? You know, like, I don't get it, honestly.
Yeah, fascinating. But I think I certainly had a little bit of a revelation of that when I was in the midst of what I used to do, which was kind of understanding at some point that it's a lot of stress to amass stuff, especially when you've got to compete and basically make sure other people don't get it. It's not an abundant source, you know, the spiritual abundance, brilliant, but in terms of the physical, it's limited, and it's a urgency to the time limit. But I ended up with everything I wanted when I was 24, and I got the big so what straight after it. And it's quite a big one. I think it's difficult that, you know, I'm very fortunate to have had that experience and the depressing side of it afterwards to help realize that there's so much more to see and to experience. And whether it's, you know, at the age of 20 or at the age of 100, the same possibility exists to connect to it. And I think, yeah, that's really fascinating. I feel very similar, I think, about it. I maybe need reminding of it every now and again when I go on a little quest of trying to get mine and get a bit caught up in it. But that's been really fascinating. As with all these, you know, meetings with guests and brilliant encounters, we'd love to give people that do listen to this a chance to find you, a chance to follow up on things they've heard and find out more about you. You mentioned you have a blog. You've obviously got the Sacred Psychiatry book as well. Anything else?
Now, I would love people to buy my book. I'd love people to buy my book and to read it. And if they like it, to leave me a review on Amazon. That would be like fantastic.
Right. We will push that. So I'm in there. I shall give you a review. Don't worry.
Okay.
But yeah, brilliant. And online, did you mention there was a blog? Is there anywhere you want to direct people?
Yeah, they can go to my website, which is my name, judithsafrirmd.com. And my website has a lot of information on it. It's just not a website. It's like there's a lot of resources there for people to learn about things. Ooh. But you could sign up for my blog, and I write about things that I care about that are exciting and interesting to me. It's called Adventures in Holistic Psychiatry, but it's about astrology. It's about just everything about functional medicine and what's going on the planet. Whatever is like catching my interest and eye.
Beautiful. What an amazing hour of my life that was. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Very cool.
I enjoyed talking to both of you.
That was amazing. Thank you. I was quite happy just in the background there listening to the two of you for most of it. People may well forget that I'm on that one. But that was thank you so much for your time. That was a phenomenal hour.
Yeah, brilliant.
It really was.
I think you and me are going to be talking sparks after this. There's many things we need to follow up on. But Judy, thanks ever so much again. And we shall keep you posted. And thanks again.
Thank you.